tape will run out long before we do.
Each of us wants to say something about the help Dr. Fred has given to women in the university, to undergraduates and graduates, and to the comparatively few women on our faculty. He was raised partly in Oklahoma Territory, but mostly on a Virginia farm, and spent a lot of his boyhood, therefore, on horseback. When he talks about blue ribbon fillies, he's paying any woman a compliment. And I've often heard him ask, what about the fillies in the university faculty? Why haven't we more blue ribbon fillies? So let's start now with one of them who has worked closely with him, Dr. McCoy.
I've known Dr. Fred since I was an undergraduate student, but at that time he paid no attention to us undergraduates.
I think I was a senior at the time I first spoke with him in the chairman's office. I had just been offered a position in Washington at a fabulous salary, as I thought of it then. Dr. Fred called me in that day and gave me a pep talk about graduate work, and then offered me the salary of $60 a month. I think I must have hesitated, because immediately after talking with Dr. Fred, Mr. Hastings called me in again, and he told me that this was an opportunity that I should really consider, because he said Dr. Fred was the genius of our department, and that I could not work with a genius every day of my life. It didn't take me very long then to decide that Mr. Hastings was right, and that I would choose graduate work and go on. The first problem that Mr. Fred gave me was one that he himself had wanted to do, and as a result of that, I think he took more direct interest than he would otherwise have done. It is... Don't you think this is too late? Well, to go back to this problem, Dr. Fred had, during the First World War, had helped in the Allied War Board to work on a bacterial fermentation. They had got it to run, to operate during the emergency, but he had never had time to go back and work on the bacteria themselves. And this was at least 5 years later. He still had not had time to do that. But he invited me to take those bacteria and study them, learn, as I remember he said, learn more about them than anyone else ever knew, and then finally give the name to them. They had been called by a code number before that, and there was no scientific name or description of the species. So my first thesis, master's degree thesis, was that study that Dr. Fred himself would like to have done but never had time. As a result, of course, he came in every day to see results as they developed, and at times he would argue with me about what to do next, but he always left me a great deal of freedom. Mrs. Bunn, you did say something about Dr. Fred's practical interest and his slants on life. Because he had come from a farm, he always thought that the soil was the base of everything. And so I can remember he used to say that if you kept your feet on the ground, you could go as high as you wanted. But in other words, he left us as much freedom as possible, but he kept track to keep us on the track.
I believe he worked for him at a very low salary compared to what you would have had in Washington, you've told me.
Well, $60 in those days was not too bad, but it wasn't nearly as much. As I remember it, the other offer was $3,800 a year, and for my first offer, just out of college, that sounded very good. The department in those days was not as large as it now is. I think I was not the only girl that he had to deal with. From time to time, he had other graduate women, but Most of them went to the master's degree and then, for one reason or another, dropped out. There was one girl that he used to call Helen of Troy. She was a tall Norwegian girl, very attractive, family name of Eckhart. I think he liked her and he liked her mind, but he didn't really expect her to make much use of the mind. She fooled him, though, because after marriage she took a teaching job, and I think she's still teaching.
You know, Dr. McCoy, I sometimes wondered at the fact that you justified his hope in you. Should I backtrack? May not be a major reason for his faith in other women scientists.
Well, he did take us as individuals. He never raised the point of our being women or men, as I remember it. He always challenged us to think as a person and, of course, to think scientifically. And so I'm sure that at that time his interest in each graduate student was in his potential to develop into a scientist, regardless of sex. I'm sure he liked undergraduates in those days, but he had very little contact with them. And Ms. Peterson, if I can remember, he used to notice the girls on campus, but he never met them in classes because he never taught undergraduates. And as a result, I think he just was, he was dealing entirely with the few graduate women that he knew personally.
That may have been true earlier. When I'm a relatively late comer in Dr. Fred's life. I was on the staff for 2 years while he was president. And during those 2 years, I was always amazed at his interest in undergraduates and his knowledge of them. His real concern that those that had ability were pushed to their ability, but his honest sympathy and understanding of those who really weren't too earnest about going on. And so I think this must be something he learned through the years, to appreciate other than the scientifically oriented fine mind, that he appreciated all kinds of young women and worked with them.
But I think we could have told you that before it developed, because he always liked people. And he would talk with anyone, any visitor who came in so gracefully and easily that he could learn to talk to girls.
It may have developed gradually as his daughters reached college age and he understood the problems of young girls better. I know a girl, a woman I should say, she now has 4 children, who got her degree in art education about 12 years ago. And she still speaks gratefully of Dr. Fred's understanding and support.
There are, I am sure, many young women who have graduated from the University of Wisconsin who would back up that particular statement. Just as a little personal sideline, I think I came to the University of Wisconsin because of Dr. Fred. I knew of the fine reputation of the university. I came here for an interview and went home after the interview and spoke little of the university, but a great deal of what fun it would be to work for a man like Dr. Fred. He convinced me in just a couple of hours of his sincere interest in women and women students at the university, and I knew that working with him in the particular area of the Dean of Women's Responsibility would be a great deal of pleasure. And after I'd been on campus just a short time, I had much evidence of it. The first Sunday I was here, I went to dinner with the Freds at Slichter Hall. It seemed to me that even though this was a summer session, he knew something about almost every young woman and talked with them and visited with them, and I thought this was wonderful. And then I well remember,
shall I bring in the...
Well remember when early in the fall he called me one day and said to me he knew of a young woman on campus who was pregnant. And he wondered what my attitude would be about this. And I had a feeling he was testing me, that if I threw up my hands in horror and said she has to go, I probably would never know the name of the young woman. But that if I reacted with warmth and interest and sympathy and offered some help, he was willing to have me come into it. But until he had tested me to see what my attitude would be, he was not about to have me do something, this young woman, that shouldn't be done. And later I learned through many conversations with him that there were young women in the university who, when they were in serious trouble, whether it be pregnancy or some other trouble, went directly to the president's office and talked to Dr. Fred because they knew of his warmth and his understanding and his sympathy toward them. You probably saw that too, that he was interested in more just than their scientific development, their personal development in all kinds of ways.
I remember one time when a girl had appendicitis and he called family and made all the arrangements for her when she didn't know how to plan for herself.
I think of one of the first year I was here. He couldn't know much about me, but I went to the office to see him about a personal problem, and he said to me, and I walked in, "Don't you have a new coat on?" And I'm sure he did this sort of thing with all kinds of people of personal interest. He didn't call you Elizabeth or Dr. McCoy, did he? What does he call you?
This is not a very complimentary to me. He often calls me Bessie, and his reason is that they had a very good cow of that name in Virginia.
I know that he does it as a compliment because I've heard him refer to you as that.
Well, as long as we mention cows in Virginia, and as long as Mr. Harrington wants these to be for the files, perhaps, for the archives, and of a historical nature, I asked Rosa Fred, that is Mrs. E.B. Fred, if she knew who influenced Dr. Fred the most. And I think her answer bears a certain relationship to what we are saying about his help and respect for the women students. She said two hard-headed women and at the same time very religious women were the major influences in his life. Of course, his grandfather was broken by the war between the states, and his father had to go out to Oklahoma Territory and start in all over again. But his grandmother, Brune, who had borne the major responsibility for the farm during the war, stayed on in Middleburg. He was born in her house, and his stories of her are really fascinating. As an old woman, she came to Sunnybank and had one room with her own furniture in it. He used to get up and make all the fires in the morning as a small boy, and when he came in to make her fire, she told him stories. He learned that General Mosby, the famous Southern guerrilla leader, was hidden many times in the Brune's house. His E.B. Fred, of course, stands for Edwin Brune Fred. Sometimes the town of Middleburg changed hands, passing from the control of the Yankees to the control of the Confederates twice in the same day. Dr. Fred said that Grandmother Brune liked some of the Yankee officers whom she was forced to feed. She cooked hot bread for them, but she never would eat with them. And she has left a very exciting diary of those years, which will soon be preserved in microfilm. Now, his mother had even, I think, tougher experience of growing up in Loudoun County, Virginia, during the Reconstruction period. The man she loved had to go out to Anadarko, Oklahoma Territory, to help his father run an Indian agency there. And after her marriage, Kate
Conway Fred, as she was called, went back and forth between Anadarko and Virginia. She forded rivers, always afraid of the quicksand. She rode 60 miles in a buckboard from the end of the railroad to Anadarko, and apparently her health wasn't as robust as that of her mother. I think that she died before he got to boarding school.
There was probably an influence of this early loss of his mother. I remember Mr. Fred saying that in the school where he was trained as a child, he had to be ready to for inspection day or night. And it was very strict discipline. And the cleanliness of the laboratory in his part of our department was a direct reflection of this early training that he had in his school. He used to tell us about the night inspections when the commander of the school would come and with white kid gloves rub his hands over the boys' desks and equipment, even the rifles that they were supposed to have cleaned and stacked away in the corner. He was the best housekeeper in our department. It was he who always remembered when to defrost the icebox or to make transfers of stock cultures or anything else in routine.
I believe you told me that he did a good deal with the milk formulas for his two daughters when they were babies.
Yes, and that's not a bad thing for a bacteriologist to do. He made the artificial formulas, sterilized the bottles, pasteurized the formula in the bottles. It seemed to please him to do that, and I suppose he had not yet taught Mrs. Fred. She could have done it, of course, but he took pleasure in doing that, especially for their second daughter, Rosalie. The formula that he made was a modified cow's milk with lactic acid added to it. And he had just worked upon the lactic acid fermentation in silage and sauerkraut and a commercial lactic acid. So it was a pleasure to him to see a practical use for his acid.
It's interesting that Rosalie became a bacteriologist. Mrs. Fred said that when she was in college, someone asked her just what she was going to major in, and she'd never thought about it, but she put down bacteriology. And of course, Anne is a successful doctor of medicine. She's been here recently. She has been practicing abroad with the troops, and I think she expects to stay in the army, doesn't she? Do you know about that?
I
believe she does. She's given us a little statement that we're going to wind up with, but I want to say one word about Dean Troxell, just to say that she confirms what Dr. Martha Peterson has said, and she was the dean before Martha Peterson. Anybody
personal before I read Anne? I have talked with Miss Troxell at great length about Dr. Fred and his warmth and understanding and support, and I know that she felt even more strongly than I have had the opportunity to feel his interest in women, his support of women, his constant lookout for women to advance on the faculty, to be placed on the faculty. And one of his frequent questions, she said, would be, why aren't there more women on our staff? Why we ought to be adding women to it? And I remember in light of the story you told me, that Mrs. Troxell said one of Dr. Fred's favorite comments when he found some woman on the staff of whom he approved, he would say, "She doesn't seem a bit spavin, does she?"
I don't know what I'm supposed to say at all. All I think of is another horse story. I think it'll serve you right if I tell it. Blanche Trilling went to Dr. Fred about a dressing room for the girls, a place to take showers after they played field hockey. And the natural place was, of course, somewhere near the hockey field. So he suggested that some showers could be put in the stable or quite close to the stable. And she was terribly annoyed. She said, "Well, there'll be a horse smell all around there." He said, "Well, what better smell could there be?" Now, if you want to give a wind-up before I read Anne Fred's statement about women, I asked her to tell me something about her feeling of Dr. Fred and his relation to women. Perhaps because he was her father, she didn't want to be very personal. So this is what she sent me last week when she was here visiting. And I guess we can just close our tape with it. "Society has need of the special talents of women. The more sensitive understanding, the warmth of the feminine mind, and the willingness to do small duties well. All of these contribute to a need for women in the sciences and professions."